I'm Annie Warmke.
And I am Jay Warmke.
From Blue Rock Station.
Yes, 40 acres in beautiful southeastern Ohio, surrounded by what passes for reality.
Wow. So when the biomass hits the wind turbine, that's what we're going to talk about today.
Or money can't buy me love. So we're going to talk a little bit today about how really focusing on the economics of happiness. This is one of your favorite subjects,
the
I know.
The economics of happiness. The that doesn't even sound like it should make any sense.
It does, but it does. Because, I mean, we've all heard, as we said, money can't buy me love, money can't buy happiness. Yet everything in our society is focused on money and the acquiring of money and the acquiring of things. So if you're going to sit here, which you do many, many times as we're sipping tea at the Overlook and you say, I am the richest woman in the world, I know you don't mean that
I definitely mean it in every way.
What do you mean by wealth? Wealth without money.
Wealth without money. Well, I don't really have an exact 1-2-3 definition, but wealth does include money because guess what? The government, when you have to pay taxes, or the bank, when you have to pay for your loan or your debt, they don't care what else you have unless they're going to take it for in lieu of payment.
So you're saying you won't be happy without money, but you don't need money to be happy?
No, I'm not saying you won't be happy without money. I think it's a mix of many things. And so I think it doesn't start with money. And that's the problem we have with our culture. Since 1950, they did a study in 1950, and it said that we had peaked at our happiness, our most happiness time, around 1955 or 56, and then everything has gone down from there. And the problem is that we've also then increased our consumption. So one of the things that I feel really strongly about is to stop consuming. We have a lot of things that we buy we don't need, and reusing things, repurposing things, really valuing what we already have. That's a part of it. But then also part of what makes me rich is that I have meaningful relationships. I have close relationships with friends. I have been a person who's had the advantage of having an education and also access to information. I have reliable transport. I have a good spiritual life. So it's really about a variety of things that make up the whole picture of life.
Well, since the focus of this particular show is all about sustainability, are you arguing then that money really has no role to play in living a sustainable lifestyle? Is that where you're coming from on that?
Well, I suppose it could be that it doesn't have any role to play, but I don't quite know, just maybe because of my age and how I grew up, how you could completely get along without money. Because there are just some things that, like toilet paper and definitely the bank.
Notice you said toilet paper first.
That might have it.
If I were making a list of everything I needed for a happy life.
All right, underwear.
I don't know. I mean, we're already in a different place, so... Well, I know that a lot of people who come to Blue Rock Station, you know, oftentimes their position is, okay, what do I need to buy to be sustainable?
Right.
And our sort of token response is, it's what you don't buy that makes you sustainable. So when you talk about living a life without a focus on material goods, maybe could you give me an example of what that might look like?
Well, an example would be just from my own personal experience, and that is that we decided a few years ago that we were going to have just 30 days where we were not going to consume, we weren't going to shop, and we weren't going to use energy that came from the electric grid, or really we would fill up the car at the end of the month, and that was going to have to do until the end of the month, and we just have to decide if we had emergency, or I know then you got a teaching job right before we started that project. And so we had to rethink it a little bit. But anyway, so that first time we did that, we were really trying to figure out, what does it mean to take a vacation from consumption? And what that began to show us is to have an awareness more of what life would be like without thinking about, all right, I have to buy this, I have to buy that, and also better planning. So we moved from that 30 days to 4 months, and we call that thanks for nothing season. And the way it really works is we have an annual shopping list. We know most of what we need over a period of time. And so we're prepared. We have it planned out. And we have 4 months that occasionally we do have to have something for our business, or we might have to have something for our livestock because we only have so much space to store hay and things like that. But we know that's coming. So we're not shopping. And what that has done is to permanently put us in a position not to shop. So I can't think of when we have actually gone someplace and started looking at things to think about, all right, we want to shop for something. And so by removing ourselves from that process for those 4 months of the year, it's created the ability to really look at life, I think, quite a lot differently in a less serious way. Of course, it involves not having debt. Definitely no debt for buying things that we don't really need. I know I made a deal with myself this year. I wasn't going to spend money on clothes this year. And so the way that works is my friends and I have a couple of swaps a year. There's a couple of organizations that I support politically that have some swaps. And so for the most part, I'm able to find if I need something, like I need a new dress for something special I'm going to do, or sometimes I need new sandals because they get worn out. Those things are out there. They've already been purchased by somebody, and I'm exchanging them for something else that someone needs from me. That makes a lot more sense to me than going to a store and telling corporate America, I'm going to take this one thing off the shelf, and that leaves an opening for you to make another one, full well not knowing that there's anybody else that wants to buy it.
So someone listening to this right now might be going, you know, okay, this is great. I know there's something really wrong with the society that I live in. I'm not feeling overly fulfilled no matter what I buy, no matter how much money I'm making. I still feel that there's something wrong. So how do you motivate them, or how does somebody motivate themselves to sort of get into this post-consumer attitude? You know, I mean, what are the barriers that they're going to have to overcome?
Well, I think somebody my age is totally just screwed, because really the truth is most people don't want to change, but young people are already getting it. There are a lot of young people that don't want to work 9 to 5 because they don't want to be just in one place. They don't want to be in debt. They don't want to own a car. So they're more pliable. They're the ones that I would want to talk to. Plus, they are discouraged by society and the way things are going and how difficult it is to have an education and still have to work 2 or 3 jobs or not find a job at all. So they're being forced to think about things the way I'm thinking about them, even though mine is more of coming from a luxury position, because I don't have to do it this way. I just choose to do it. So I think we have to just say, let's talk to young people. Let's help young people understand the transition that they're going through. And then how can we help them to learn some skills that you and I would have learned in school around carpentry and plumbing and sewing and cooking and all those things that enrich their life. And once we've helped them enrich their life, so that they're doing more of those kind of things, of cooking, eating meals together, really doing things as community, then we make that transition. But I think people my own age, they're settled in. They don't see the value.
Yeah, it strikes me as, you know, asking to someone to go on a diet, but without changing the way they're eating. You know, I mean,
well, that happens all the time.
Well, yes, I mean,
there's no cause and effect.
No, I have no personal experience with that, but I've heard it's that way. So then it sounds like we're kind of trying to rewrite the American dream. I mean, I know we had a group of students at our place. One time they were talking, it was a group of Swedish students talking about the American dream. And it was interesting to see the American high school students trying to explain to the Swedish high school students, what is the American dream? And everything about it centered around material things. You know, the American dream is to get a big house, to have a nice car, to have lots of things. And I asked the Swedish students if there was a Swedish dream, and everything in their dream was around having meals with your family, looking at the ocean, taking walks in the woods, gardening, you know, things like that that seemed more spiritual in nature. So are you saying that as a society, we somehow have to get past this materialistic accumulation mode and get into a more of a, what, awareness, spiritual type? I don't mean Hare Krishna dancing around and singing Kumbaya. I mean just...
Oh, sure you do.
Well, yeah, okay.
But here's the thing. We're not really trying to do anything new. Our grandparents, their grandparents, they knew all this. They didn't watch TV. They learned how to play musical instruments, and they played games together, and they had a work ethic. And so I'm just saying we're trying to get back to the roots of who we are as a people, and we're not going to have a choice because we don't have the resources to maintain the lifestyle of consumption with all the tchotchkes and the plastic crap coming out of China and other places. We just don't have the ability to sustain that. And so we're not going to have a choice, which is, thank God, we don't have a choice.
Well, you did. I mean, you mentioned television, which seems, at least to me, to be at the heart of some of this.
Well, it's just a giant commercial. Even when you're watching a very serious show, everything about it has got lots of Ford cars and iPads or iMacs, or, you know, it's selling product during the entire show. There was a study that was done with that film, with the TV show Friends, and where they were showing, you know, all the stuff they had in this apartment, and people would go out the next day and start ordering the dishes that they had, because there was this sense, when they did the surveys, they determined that there was this sense that if I buy those dishes and I put them on my table or in my cupboard, I'm going to have the same kind of friendships and the same kind of community. I'm going to instantly create it by buying the dishes. And that's how superficial we've become. So at some point, we're going to move away from that. And I really see younger people doing that already. Yes, they do wear clothing that has brand names on it and things like that. But they trade with each other. They identify the need to reuse and repurpose. And most of that's because they have to. They cannot afford overall to purchase a lot of things new. But they want to have a nice place. They want to have a place to have meals with their friends. And so I think we're just getting back to where some of the values that our ancestors had around family, community, neighborhoods, really helping each other. I don't see any point. I don't see any way we get around it.
Well, isn't some of the dissatisfaction that a lot of people feel in comparing themselves with others? It sort of strikes me, you mentioned Friends, where you're looking at some people who are working like as a waitress in a coffee shop, able to afford a lifestyle that really is almost, you know...
Unbelievable.
Yes, I mean, you're living in an apartment in New York City that clearly would cost $10,000 a month kind of thing. So we're being given these unrealistic expectations of what we should have and what we should achieve with the effort that we're willing to put forth. Is that some of the problem there?
Well, I think it's a big problem, but I think most of that is being aimed at... At a society that can't afford it. We can't afford that image. We certainly can't afford that image from a universal standpoint, because the rest of the world wants to have two or three meals a day, and they want to have transportation.
The nerve of these people.
I know it, and they're getting ready. They're coming on strong, and so the earth can't sustain it. And young people in this country cannot sustain it because they don't have the options. They don't have the opportunities. That we may have a very low unemployment rate, but I mean, Judas Priest, people got to have two or three jobs. They can't even afford to have an apartment. You have to earn at least $15 an hour in the state of Ohio to be able to afford a bare bones apartment. No car, but the apartment. So we've got to acknowledge that change is coming, and we won't have a choice.
Well, and that's some of the reality. I mean, we're looking at the age of the internet, where we like everything to be free.
And instantaneous.
But somebody's paying for it. So how do we pay for it? We pay for it through advertising, through consumerism. So
I don't believe that. I think it's paid for in data. I think lots and lots of data, because we're being followed around. You know, people put little stickers over the camera on their laptop so that the camera can't be reversed and people can determine what's happening. People are buying toys that have mechanisms in it that can monitor everything that's happening in your house. This is 1984 Big Brother. Whoa, scary stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm frightened. I figure they can have my data because I'm
we don't such have a, high speed broadband.
I'm such a boring person. Yeah, if they can get it from us through dial up, I think we're probably
good.
But I think it's not so much a scary thing. I think it's more being aware that people are in fact using you as a tool.
Yeah.
There's a famous saying somewhere that if you don't pay for a product, then you are the product.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and that's certainly true today.
We just need to be aware of that. So okay. So we're in agreement. Obviously, I mean, we live in a house made out of garbage for heaven's sake. So. Clearly,
but I just want to say that the other part of this is, at least for my life, I try to just live as honestly as I can. So I'm honest about what the true cost of things are. And so when I pay 50 cents for something that I am sure there's no way that could have been produced for 50 cents, then maybe I shouldn't buy that 50 cent piece, because somebody is making up the difference. And maybe it's little children in other countries. Maybe it's immigrants who are picking the food for me. Whatever that is, I want to be honest. And, you know, it's serious, but it's also great. It's freeing to be able to say, all right, here's my list. Here's my annual shopping list. And this is what I'm going to need for the year. And as things present themselves, then I have control and feel really good about my life, because I'm not blindsided by being sold to. I don't really watch television. I can see films if I want to, but I'm not going to watch mainstream television because, frankly, it's not well done. And I don't want to be sold to, and I don't want to be told what to think. I want to have my own thoughts, and I want to be able to share that with other people who are like-minded.
Well, I find it interesting that we have these discussions with a lot of people, and I think even those sitting here listening will probably be nodding their heads and agreeing, saying, okay, our society is messed up. I'm feeling like there should be a better alternative. Consumerism is out of control. And we all tend to agree on that. But then when we say, okay, well, what's the next step? How do I then personally change my behavior? And we've got good friends who will have this discussion. And then we find out, well, they ran down to Walmart and bought some silly thing.
Like over and over and over again.
And it's because, well, they have the best prices. And you say, okay, everything we've just had discussion about prior to this has not connected, because you're saying for this very short-term sense that I save $2, I am going to shore up this system that clearly is not working for me.
Or supporting my life. Really.
Yeah, and it's not working for society. So if we say, all right, we want to get rid of the whole consumptive mindset, what do we put in this place? I mean, how do you make these changes?
Well, I think one of them is about planning. It really takes a plan. When people tell me I couldn't help it, I had to go to Walmart, some of that is because they just want something right now and they don't want to have to wait or see it through. I think putting things in place of consumption requires thinking. It requires a basic knowledge of yourself. So creating time for true leisure, for just resting on the couch or the lawn chair and doing nothing. And not because you're so exhausted you can't move, but because you choose to take that time. Time for your family, eating together, cooking together, demanding that everybody be at the table. So even if you don't eat, you're still there sharing the news of the day. Eating with your family is probably the number one thing that you could do that would make some changes, especially with your own kids. And we have a lot of young people that come to Blue Rock Station. And when we bring this up and talk about leisure time and eating with your family and cooking with your family, and some of those kids will start laughing, and they're not kids. They're either in their early 20s, mid 20s, and they'll say,
well, that's a lot younger than it used to be.
Okay.
You know.
Well, anyway, so what they'll say is, no way, my parents aren't going to do it. They won't do it. They won't see the value. And so I said, look, if you as the son or daughter or the young person in their life is asking for this and you are consistently providing some opportunity, they are eventually going to give in because, yes, there are parents who are no good, but most parents do want to spend time with their children or the young people in their life, but the opportunity has not existed, so you've got to pave the way. There are so many barriers. This is the challenge that we have to cooking and eating together. People schedule their lives with amazing, like we got to go to soccer and football, and then we're going to eat out, and then we're going to do whatever. And so there are all these things on a list.
Well, that gets to the point of why. Why do they do that? Why do you think they do that? I mean, why
is it? Because they're filling up some empty hole in their body because they don't have a sense of that spiritual peace that comes from doing less, from living more simply, from just reading a book instead of how many books did I read this year. You know, it's all a big competition, and they're pushing their kids to be in this competitive environment, and it's not healthy. It's very stressful. And when is it enough?
Is that sort of an extension of the idea of you are what you do? I mean, here in America, we love when you meet somebody, you say, what do you do? What do you do? And I know when we lived in Europe, we never met anybody who came up to us and said, so what do you do? I mean, it was all more like, oh, what is your heritage? Where was your grandmother born? You know,
I think it's about enough versus balance. You know, we don't have good balance in our life, and we don't have as a culture, and we don't focus on that. We don't teach how to have balance in life. It's like we need more and more and more and more. So we have no way to self-define what is not just balance, but it's about how do we know how we have enough of something? How do we know we have enough things to do, enough money, enough debt, enough anything?
But if you define yourself by what you do, then isn't it by definition never enough?
Well, there's no end. That's the problem. Because if you're only defining yourself by producing, it's not about a sense of accomplishment. It's not about a sense of purpose. It's just this drive. Because the more you have, then everybody's going to look around and say, aren't you wonderful? Aren't you terrific? Oh, and the other side of that is, and now I'm safe. I got a lot of stuff. I got a lot of something. And now I'm perfectly safe. Even though the reality, when we look around, is that's not the way it works. It's an illusion of safety.
Well, this is being reinforced to us. I think this idea of more and focusing on the production and the monetary. We've had this discussion before about the daily stock report. You know, where every day in almost every media outlet, you hear a report of what's going on in the stock market. Yet, of all the information that you could possibly get in a given day, that is the most useless piece of information you could possibly get. Because, first off, you're not probably invested in the stock market. The stock market has no reflection upon the economic well-being of our society as a whole. And if you are thinking of buying or selling some stock, you're not going to listen to NPR to get the information to make that decision. You're going to do some very specific research. So why is it in our society that every media outlet, all the way from the local podunk TV station or radio station to the national news, every day gives us the stock report?
Because that's how we've always done it. That's the problem. So what if we had, because that's the reality, and there's some big companies that underwrite that stock report, which help that station to stay in place, because lots of media, especially radio media, have some really big challenges right now. But here's the other side of that. What if we had a happiness report, a contentment report that said how well we were really doing? You know, as they always say is that, you know, if it bleeds, it reads. But what? No, don't they say that?
If it bleeds, it leads.
Oh, well, it also reads.
And then you read it.
Okay. I was close. I just had one letter wrong. Uh-huh. But anyway, the reality for me is I want to hear what's really good about my town, my neighborhood, my county, my region. Mm-hmm. So what's gone right? How well has Rural Action done in, you know, at the produce auction? And they come back and say, these last 8 years or whatever, we brought $3 million into this region. That is something to celebrate. I want to hear that kind of report every day on my news, the happiness factor. And that is going to make people paint the stuff that looks horrible, that's run down. That's going to make people say hello to their neighbors. Mm-hmm. That could just have the impact. It just would be beyond belief.
I think that was pretty well articulated by Robert Kennedy years ago when he was talking about how when you measure economics, you're measuring the good and the bad. If you get cancer, it is a economic opportunity. I mean, it is going to generate a lot of revenue
for
somebody.
You mean by hospitals, doctors?
Oh, yeah, there's a whole industry around your suffering.
Even clothing.
And yet, how do we measure the economic value of a child's smile?
Or a big tree in your yard.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at these things that truly bring us joy, and they have no economic value in our traditional measurement. Yet those things that we measure wars, they measure disease, they measure misery as a positive.
As an economic issue.
Right. So
it is an economic issue for lots and lots of people at the top.
I think it's really getting to the point of, in order to make change, you have to be able to measure something. And we are simply not measuring the right things.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have a huge impact on our business models. It would have a big impact on everything in our life. If we were to just change that one thing. It's like a paradigm shift that seems really tiny but almost impossible to make happen.
Mm-hmm. So if you were going to sum it up, what would be your first step? What would be the one thing you would do first to try and go from consumerism to happiness?
I would say take a vacation from buying anything. Just use what you've got and see what you're made of to make that happen. You could do it for a week. You could do it for a month. You could do it for 4 months like we do, but just challenge yourself. It's not that big a deal. It's not like you're going to die. It's not like you're going to fall over because you didn't get it right. So I would just say take a vacation from buying stuff.
Sounds like a plan. Let's go for it.
All right. You've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Annie and Jay Warmke from Blue Rock Station. And as my grandmother used to say, the secret to happiness is to play nice with others.
And clean up your own mess.
And eat your veggies.
Oh, do I have to?
Yep, you do.
Mother Earth will sing and her children will be healed. Come out, see the morning glory, blossom.